Hi, this is Ken McCarthy, and welcome to our System Masterclass. And have you ever had the experience of having an idea and just whacking yourself on the head and saying, why didn't I think of this years ago? And boy, I'm having that experience in spades right now. Our guest today is somebody I really should have been interviewing all along, but hey, better late than never in that spirit. He's a copywriter. He's a great educator of copywriters. In fact, I'd say one of the best active in the field today, one of the very, very best. And he's put out a lot of really interesting books, too, and interesting courses and programs, and we're going to talk about some of those. He's also a busy guy, so we're not really putting this call on so that you can call him up and try to hire him. I've been trying to do that from, well, on and off for years and haven't been successful yet, but I keep persisting. He's got a lot going on. Let me introduce everybody. If you don't know his name, Ben Settle. Ben, are you there?
I'm here, Ken. Thank you.
Great. Ben, I forget how we met. It almost doesn't matter. We've been corresponding back and forth. I've got a bunch of your stuff. I've got the copywriting grab bag, which I love. I've got Cracker Jack Selling Secrets, which I also love. You've got an interesting blog that you're posting to very regularly. And you're doing a lot of interesting things in the area of copywriting. So I like to do this with everybody, which is talk about how they found the internet, in this case, copywriting, what you were doing before, how you found it, and how you found your way to making this your career.
Okay. Well, I actually started out in network marketing, which a lot of people tend to start out that way, it seems, over 10 years ago. And I absolutely was terrible at it. I couldn't do anything with that for a couple of years. And what happened was I'd gotten married, and my wife had actually lived in Washington State, and I lived in Illinois at the time, and she came over to live in Illinois, so she pretty much left her family and everything to come be with me, which maybe that shows early persuasion skills on my part, I don't know. But
you were better at one-on-one selling than
yeah.
than living room closes, okay.
And so she came over, and we just were really bad with managing money and gotten a lot of debt and gotten a lot of trouble like that, financial trouble. And we, within 9 months of marrying her, we were technically homeless. I mean, we weren't on the street, but we had to come to a decision. We were so bad off financially, we had a choice to go live with my mother, or we found this like $200 a month office to go live in, and no way were we going to live with my mother, so we went and lived in literally in a two-room office with no bath, with no shower or anything, just a bathroom. And we thought, well, we'll just have to make this work, because at the time we also had a cleaning business, and she had come out and she had gotten on the phone. She just picked up the Yellow Pages and started getting cleaning clients, which is, I was always impressed with that. And so anyway, one thing led to another. Things were getting really bad. We were wasting all this money on network marketing leads and that sort of thing. We were just spinning our wheels. I remember we actually went door to door trying to recruit people in the network market, and that's kind of how desperate it was getting. Mm. And if anyone's ever tried that, it's just not the way to do it. And one night I'm just laying there literally on the office floor. We had the blankets out. We're sleeping in the office. And I'm just laying there thinking, this is not working. I'm a pretty stubborn guy, and I stuck with this network marketing thing probably way too long, and I said, something's not working. I'm kind of a spiritual guy, and I just started praying about it, and I couldn't sleep that night. I remember this was like 3 a.m., and I just got up, and I went to the other room, because there were only two rooms, and I just started kind of looking at my bookshelf, and there was this book Biley wrote called The 7 Lost Secrets of Success, and that is an excellent book. It's about this guy named Bruce Barton, who is an old-time advertising guy. He's the guy that, like, John Caples, for example, would, like, learn from him, apparently, or they used to learn from each other. And I was reading this book, and there was a story in there. I just kind of flipped to it, and there's a story in there about how this guy came to Bruce Barton in 1919. I guess the economy wasn't doing too good, and it was in a big office building. And the guy was a salesman who had a talent. Apparently he was known for writing sales letters. And Bruce Barton took him to the edge of the window, and he said, look at all those buildings out there. How can you sit there and tell me you're out of work? You write sales letters. Write a sales letter and sell someone out there on hiring you. And there was just something about that story that just clicked with me. And I just started looking at copywriting and sales letters, and you know, from there I found the Dan Kennedys and the Gary Halberts and the Ken McCarthys, and you know, and it just spiraled up from there. I just started getting really into it.
Wow, I didn't even know half of that. That's amazing. How I want to encourage everybody listening, and I say this a lot, and I'll never stop saying it because it's true. You'll rarely regret buying a book. You know, there's a lot of stuff you'll regret buying, but you'll rarely regret buying a book. I'm shocked at the number of people that try to make progress, not only in advertising and marketing and business, but in life in general, without doing at least a little reading. And frankly, the more reading, the better. And here's kind of proof of it in a way, right? I bet you had a lot of books around.
I did. And that one, ironically, the network marketing company I was in at the time would send you a book of the month, and that was one of the books of the month. So it was kind of ironic that the one thing that got me out of that industry is something they sent me. But, hey, I just reread it the other day. I read it probably once a year. It's just a great, thin little book to read.
Wow. Well, you know, it's another principle there, too, is, you know, as long – well, we might have heard this story, and it really explains a lot. Two different frogs were thrown into two different pitchers of cream, and one frog said, I just can't, you know, there's no way I can make it. I can't climb up the side of this pitcher. I'm just going to drown. And he drowned. The other frog said, I don't know how on earth I'm getting out of this pitcher, but I'm going to keep kicking until I figure it out. And he kicked and kicked and kicked, and he turned the cream into butter, and at which point he leaped out using the butter as a platform. And that really is how it works. I mean, when I think of the things that I did that worked, they were usually after doing 10,000 things, 10,000 foolish things, by the way, that didn't even come close to working. And, you know, you never really know exactly. So, you know, in the pursuit of network marketing, which, you know, is very often leads nowhere, one little fragment of that whole experience turned out to be your way out into something much better. And that's just kind of how the way things happen. Wow. So now you made this resolution to be a copywriter, and that's good, but there's you know, what's the rest of the story? How did you go from saying, okay, I'm going to do this, to getting to the point where you're so busy that I can't hire you?
Oh, well, basically what I was really lucky in the sense that I was exposed to, and I know everybody listening to this knows who Gary Halbert is. Now, I feel very, very fortunate to have run into that and gotten a good foundation, because he had written a newsletter, ironically called Why Multi-Level Marketing Sucks. I had to read that one. And
yep.
he had this idea, basically that issue he talks about, look, why don't you just find a product somebody else is selling, offer to sell at forum using direct marketing, and you know, take a percentage of the sale. So I didn't know anything about getting clients or anything. I didn't really have a lot of skills. I did use some copywriting skills I'd learned to do the network marketing for about a month or two before I finally just dropped it totally, and that was helpful, but I didn't have any real experience. So I did that. I found this site, and I don't know if they're still around. I'm sure they are. It's called, I think it's sendfree.com, and they're like an autoresponder company. And they, at the time, you could join their list, and you would opt into this thing they called the Send Free Roundtable, which was a very interesting concept. You'd basically just get a digest every day or every week of people's offers. And so I thought, well, I'll make an offer. I mean, it was completely free to do and everything. So I said, okay, I'll write your sales letter for a percentage of the sales. And I did get about five or six clients that way, or off the top. Now, none of them paid me anything. I mean, none of them probably had any money to pay me anything. But just getting that experience and just forcing me to take all these principles I had used just from, for example, one of the first books I read was Dan Kennedy's Ultimate Sales Letter, which I found to be extremely helpful with this, and I just started writing ads for these people, and one thing led to another, and I had a little portfolio together, and from there I think I got a client on Elance or something, which again it didn't pay a lot, but it funded my next product I wanted to buy, which I think was one of John Carlton's products or something, and so I would make money at these copywriting gigs, not a lot, but just enough to keep funding my education in it for a few years, and eventually it all kind of paid off, because I've always been a big fan of, if you want to learn something, teach it to someone else. So I was, this whole time, I was writing articles about the things I would be learning about, and it caught the attention of a someone has become a good friend of mine named Michael Senoff, and he just made this offer to me. He goes, look, I got some products I want to sell. I could pay you to write the ads, or we could do joint ventures, you know, and I'll pay people to split the sales. And we did that, and that turned out to be a really long-running relationship and kind of got me going. And eventually I started taking more traditional clients on. And literally just last week I had decided not to do that anymore and just focus on my own stuff. But that's kind of how it worked. I mean, it was a long process, a good 9-year process.
I heard a really interesting saying recently, when one teaches, two learn, you know, the person learning and the teacher.
It makes perfect sense. I mean, I think I learn more when I'm teaching something than when I'm sitting at someone's feet learning from them. Or just the process of doing something is such a great teacher.
Yeah, one advice that I used to give it a lot, and maybe I forgot to give it, but here it goes again, especially for, you know, so-called newbies, you know, take that internet marketing or direct marketing information that you've got and organize a class. You know, if maybe for friends or colleagues or local group or, you know, somebody, and that'll put you in the frame of having to really organize your knowledge and really, really thoroughly understand it. And that is definitely a beneficial thing to do. Well, great. Hey, let's talk a little bit about some of the books that you put out on copywriting and how they came to be and what's in them.
Okay.
So what's your favorite one so far? Well, actually, I won't put you on the spot because they're all good, right? It's like your children. But
yeah.
Just pick anyone at random, and we'll just love to hear about it. Because explain what's in it, how you put it together, because these things are really interesting.
Okay. I'd say the three main ones that I really only sell right now or focus on selling is the one you mentioned earlier, Copywriting Grab Bag, which you so generously donated your knowledge to, and I still appreciate that because, I mean, I've had customers tell me, I think I forwarded you the email saying that that interview was their favorite one in there. But that book came, as I was saying before, I had done a bunch of articles to kind of keep teaching what I'm learning. And many of the articles in that book or the chapters in that book are really those other articles that I had just kind of updated as I learned more things. It was funny. I mean, I went back through some of these archives and I realized how much bad information I put out too during that time, which, you know, I felt kind of bad about that. But, you know, I guess that's the learning process. But I took all the really good stuff that I'm still using and that I know other people are using, and that became the first, like, third of the book. And then the other two-thirds of the book left is interviews that, you know, over the years I've just been really fortunate to meet guys like you and Doug Deanna and Doberman Dan and, you know, just people that I'm surprised that any of you guys even, you know, were gracious enough to donate your time to that because it was just really helpful. So I decided that I would kind of harness your guys' knowledge and put those in there as appendixes. And so most of the book is actually interviews with you guys. David Deutsch is another one in there. Brian Clark. I mean, all you guys just have all this knowledge that I certainly never had. I do now because I've read your guys' interviews. But it just made this book extremely powerful, and it's really deep. It's really not for people who are just kind of casually into this. It's really for people who just want to sink their teeth into something and just get real deep into the whole subject.
Great. Yeah, it's kind of unique. I'm sure somebody else has done something like that at some point, but I honestly can't think of anybody that's done it at the level that you did it with this book. The quality of the people that you interview, and the quality of the stuff they share. And some of the names may not be familiar to some of our listeners, but you know, Doug Deanna is like, you know, right up there at the very top of the pinnacle. You know, David Deutsch, fantastic copywriter. These are very, very fine copywriters, and to get them to invest time in talking about how they do what they do is you know, a pretty great accomplishment. And that one came out, can you believe it? That was 4 years ago.
Yeah, it was. It was 2007, you're right. And I think I officially published it in 2008, early 2008, and you know, since then it's kind of, I've added some things mostly to it. Like I added a diff to it that has all these other interviews I've done over the years. I just have all this content, and it's not that I'm against giving stuff away for free, but people don't value free as much as when they pay for something. So I put all these interviews on there that I had done. onto this disc that comes with it. So the ones that are in the book, that's not even the whole story. I mean, there's all these audio ones too that I just never got transcribed, just ranging from every topic, from using audio to sell to copywriting to freelance stuff to SEO. I mean, just everything that I could think of to ask somebody about, it's all in there.
You've got a great device on page one, which is this massive, like 64-point headline that says, "Wait, before reading, please take a second to go to bensettle.com." And that's just so clever because, you know, what's the purpose of a book? Well, to educate people, obviously, to collect, you know, wisdom in a single place. But it's got a very strong promotional purpose. So if that's what the book is for, why not immediately engage somebody with your internet profile as well? You know, get them involved in that right off the bat, so that when the book is on the shelf, they're still connecting with you via the internet. So that's what those are
pretty
clever.
And there's a lot of stuff like that in there too. I do that periodically throughout the book. I'll put like an interesting blog post and say, "Here's a little bonus tip," and then, you know, my link at the bottom. Because the way I actually learned this from you in a way, when I was reading your System Club Letters book, you said something in one of the chapters that the book is just the beginning of the relationship. It's not the end of it. It just get them in your door.
Yeah, it's really a glamorous, glorified business card.
Yeah, expensive one.
Which
but
is it's a strange thing because, you know, we're taught, rightly so, to revere books and that the book is the end of the trail and, you know, it's the highest accomplishment of, you know, the human mind and all that. And they are wonderful, but from a business point of view, they really are just door openers. And if you think of them that way, you'll get a lot more business mileage out of the books that you write, and even the articles that you write, than someone that, you know, kind of writes the book and feels like they just crossed the finish line and they're done.
Well, this is something that I've only been aware of consciously for over the last couple of years, but you had interviewed and had Sean D'Souza at your system seminar back in 2008, and his whole idea of making sure they consume the information was really profound. I mean, not something I'd ever thought of, and now I'm very conscious of this when I write a book or something. Once they consume that first book, they're most likely, and they like it, they're going to want your second one automatically and your third one, and it never really ends.
Yeah, and some people cynically say, "Oh, well, you know, people buy stuff and they never read it and they never do anything with it." Well, I mean, that may be the case with some people, but a lot of people, that's not the case. They actually will read the book. They're excited to read the book. And I think those people that think they're so smart with that cynical attitude miss the opportunity of really engaging with their customers and, as you pointed out, bringing them back a second, third, and fourth time. And I think everybody has had this experience in their own life, and believe me, your customers will have it too, which is that you find somebody interesting like Ben, or you find a topic that's really interesting to you, like internet marketing, or it could be anything, and you go on sort of a buying frenzy, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for instance, I'll give you a weird example. Shocking and surprising to me, I've developed a taste for opera, of all things. A friend said, "Hey, would you go to the opera with me?" And I went with her, you know, mainly because it would make her happy. And I had never really been to one as an adult. And I went, and I was like, "This is amazing, all the stuff that's going on, the music." And now I'm like, you know, buying opera CDs and going to opera. I mean, it's like it's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars. It's a frenzy right now. That's a real phenomenon. And every marketer of anything should keep that in mind. Not everybody that buys from you is on the verge of a buying frenzy, but enough of them are that it's worth doing what Ben does and what other smart marketers do, which is make it easy for them to, you know, throw the frenzy your way.
Oh, and nowadays you have Kindle, which makes this really easy because you can sell information very cheaply and conveniently for people right to their Kindle. They just love it. I mean, it's so easy to get that first sale now. Just I have not fully used this yet. I mean, I'm doing it in other niches. I haven't really done it for a business niche, but I'm finding it to be very powerful if you're in a mass market.
Well, you know what? Let's talk about that. Even though it's kind of new to you, it's probably new to everybody, this whole phenomenon of Kindle. For instance, and, you know, it's one of these facts that I hear and I just can't believe, but they say it's true, which is that Kindle sales are already outstripping Amazon's hardcover sales. Is that
Yeah, and it's I believe it completely because I have a I'm a partner in the weight loss business right now, and we have a bunch of Kindle. We have like 12 or 13 Kindle books up, and we had I think over 5,000 sales last month. And you know, we're not talking huge ticket things. We're talking $2.99, you know, that sort of thing. But these are great leads. I mean, people are buying these like crazy, and the leads you get are buyers. They're not, you know, free SEO people you got from like the search engine or anything or pay per click. I mean, these are buyers, and it's just working out really good. And it just amazes me to look at this Kindle thing. And I was so closed minded to it for so long, and now I'm just kicking myself because I see it how it works. And it's so easy to just download a book like that right to your Kindle device, whatever you use, instead of having to go get a book and lug it around. And you know, I've got a bookshelf here full of books, but we're going to move next month, and I sure wish they were all on Kindles. You know,
exactly.
You know?
I know that people who've embraced Kindle really, really do love it, I'm still a stick in the mud. You know, I still like to see my books, but yeah, you're right. Let's say you're on the road. I mean, books are heavy. There's no way around it, and you know, you can't carry a whole lot of them. But with a Kindle, you could have about 1,000. What is it? How do you process a book for Kindle? What do you have to do? How hard is it? Is Kindle the only game in town? Should you be doing it for other formats? What have you learned just from your limited experience so far?
Yeah, I'm not really the expert on it. I have a good friend who his main claim to fame, and he jokes about it, is he's the most published author of computer books in the world, which, you know, that and a token will get you on the subway. You know, it's not like it's that big of a deal, but he's really intimately familiar with the publishing industry as a whole. I mean, he's written like 90 books for major publishers. And so he's really into this Amazon thing and this Kindle thing. And he's got a business set up where he does all the work for us. You know, he puts everything up there, and he just takes like a publisher's royalty of like, you know, 17%, whatever he charges. He finds your cover. He knows ways of getting people to your Kindle listing and, you know, just things like that. He's been a huge help. So I don't really know all the details on how he does it. He has sent me detailed instructions on it, but you know, I just said, look, I'd rather just you do it, and I'll pay you to do it because it just saves time. But there are a lot of different. It's not just Kindle. I mean, there's something called Nook, and you know, there's these other ones out there. I don't know all the names. There's something for Barnes and Noble. I think there's like 30 or so ebook type things out there, and he submits to all of them. So I wish I had more information for you on that, but I don't really know.
Oh, that's okay. Are you able to give your friend's business name?
Oh, yeah. His name is Greg Perry, GREGPERRY. And I believe his website is MakeRightPublishing.com. I could be wrong about that, but if you went to Google and just typed in Make Right Publishing and Greg Perry, his blog would come up. And he's always writing about books and all that sort of thing. He likes to help authors.
Great. Well, it's a new name to me. I'm glad to know that. Let's talk about some of your favorite copywriting books. I'm curious if how closely your list intersects with mine.
Okay.
Books that you think. And by the way, I wonder if you what you think about this. I really think that whether somebody is a copywriter or not, or aspires to be a copywriter or not, that what a copywriter knows how to do is one of the most important things in business, regardless of what industry you're in or what market you're selling to, that there's a thought process that the copywriters go through that is just invaluable to every business owner or business developer. I don't know what you think about that.
Oh, I completely agree. It amazes me how useful this skill is in every aspect of my life. I mean, just for example, if I'm negotiating you know, the terms of a lease, for example, we're just doing this other week. We've been negotiating with this guy to get a rent a place from him because we're going to move next month. And I think that just knowing how to write ads has helped me get. I think we knocked at least a few $100 a month off the rent just because of, not that I'm using tricks or anything, but just clear communication, spelling everything out, using a little bit of a takeaway, that sort of thing. I mean, just basic stuff that you could do in any ad, and it amazes me just how useful this is. And we even did it once to, we had stayed at a hotel once, and we ended up leaving after like 20 minutes or something because it kind of smelled bad or something. I can't remember what the problem was, but we left. And they tried to charge our card or something anyway. And so my wife opens up a charge back, you know, the credit card company. And, well, explain your case. So, you know, I use copyright. What I know about copywriting, it's just second nature to me. But I can see how other people, if you're competing with someone in some way out there in the world, they almost don't stand a chance against you. I mean, you're going to win when it comes to negotiating or something like that.
Mm. Lately, I've been thinking of copywriting as perceptual engineering. The idea that, yep, persuasion and selling is a big part of what we do, obviously, but it really begins with engineering people's perception of the thing. You know, for instance, getting your refund on bad service or a hotel that wasn't up to par, you've got to sort of engineer to put it in plain English, tell the story in such a compelling way that the perception of the reader is matches your perception of the situation. You know, why it was so wrong and why you should obviously get your money back. You know, it's not even a question, and that's all a matter of perception. And copywriting is kind of a perceptual engineering.
You know, remember I was telling you about how earlier on we were stuck living in an office and that sort of thing? This kind of reminded me of something. One of the things we had going on at the same time is we had bought a lemon, a brand new car that turned out to be a lemon. And, you know, that turned into kind of a lawsuit at the same time, which, you know, that helps, right? You're going through all this stuff. Anyway.
Oh, God.
I mean, I was just learning copywriting at the time, but I remember like the 6 or 7 page letter I wrote to the car company. I'm purposely not naming names because we had a settlement and I don't think I'm supposed to, but that was a big factor in us getting any money back because I'd written this letter basically what you just said, explaining the story, just telling the story. I wrote it and the lawyer we had, he even used it during the hearings and everything, and yeah, I didn't even know what I was doing at the time. I was just the bare basics. But imagine if when you get really good at this sort of thing, you can really make an impact on that sort of a situation.
Yeah, and you mentioned lawyers, and I don't know why thinking about this, but I'm helping somebody right now, a young person with a legal problem, and I'm just astonished at the lack of imagination, narrative imagination, on the part of this lawyer. And he's a successful dude. I mean, he's very good at what he does. You know, I can see all kinds of, like, I use this phrase a lot, some of my perceptual engineering, to position this story in such a way that this person gets treated fairly. And he's just kind of, he's good at what he does, and he's, you know, so, you know, but he's kind of just going through the motions. He's not really using that storyteller's imagination to really, you know, get the maximum, you know, impact. So whatever it is, I mean, there's a case of something that's legal. Right, and then
man, you just reminded me of something. There's that lawyer Jerry Spence.
I
argument about every time. That whole book is about telling story. I mean, he says his legal briefs are so interesting for the judge because he's telling stories. You know, he's not doing the cold cough, but you know, like the cough medicine bottle copy is what I call it. You know, cold, just corporate, just the facts. He's telling stories and just. You know, he's never lost a criminal case since like 1969. You know, I mean, and that's a big part of it.
Exactly, and that's a great book. And I didn't. We've never talked about that book before, but I read that book when it first came out, which was a long time ago, by the way. I think that book came out in the 80s. Is that possible?
Yeah, it's been out for a while. That guy is just a master at this stuff, and it's all simple storytelling and just being down to earth and talking in a clear way and writing in a clear way and. There's no magic. In fact, I think one time he said in his book that the other lawyer in one of his cases accused him of trying to hypnotize the jury. All he was really doing was telling stories.
Well, you know, that's kind of an interesting topic right there, you know, hypnosis. You know, what is hypnosis? Well, you know, I've read a lot about it, and one of the great experts and masters of hypnosis was a physician named Milton Erickson. He was like one of the best, you know, in the whole field. And his conclusion, after decades and decades of very high-level practice, is it's the ability to fascinate people and fix their attention on what you want them to pay attention to. And if that's not storytelling, you know, I don't know what is. And by the way, if that's not copywriting, and isn't one of the recommendations or one of the suggestions to copywriters is those three words: tell a story.
It's just really the story can carry. I have found this out. I've just written literally, I don't know how many ads I've written in the last few years, but quite a few. And I'm finding that it really almost doesn't matter anything. You could almost make the sale just with a good story. And my example of this is the movie Top Gun. Top Gun came out in the 80s. Now, whether someone likes it or not doesn't matter. What does matter is it was not selling people on joining the Navy or the Air Force. It wasn't selling Tom Cruise's pair of sunglasses, and yet sales for his brand of sunglasses that he wore in that movie went up, and recruitment for the Navy and Air Force was so high after that movie came out that they had recruiters in the theaters, all because of a story. It never told you to go do that. It just painted this really cool picture of what it would be like to live that lifestyle.
Wow. And what, you know, so what's the dynamic there? And I think it is almost as simple as getting people to focus on something for a long period of time, and, you know, which a story does. So you go into a movie theater, and, you know, you're cut off from everything else. If you're in a dark room, it's ideal for hypnosis, and you're spending an hour and a half, 2 hours focusing on a single thing. Well, yeah, a lot of people are going to, after that experience, they're going to be thinking about the sunglasses and thinking about, gee, maybe I should be a pilot, and thinking about all those things. And that's one of the big challenges of being a copywriter. People misunderstand and underestimate the challenge of catching people's attention and holding it.
There's a story, and I always go back to your System Club Letters books. As I told you, I read that a little bit every day, probably for the last 3 years. It's just so good. But you told a story in there about, and I don't know if you remember it or not. I'm probably going to pick things out of your book that you've forgotten because I've probably read it so many times. But you told the story in there about some stock guy, a stockbroker who he just, for some reason, he did his homework and he was studying the markets and he saw something that would happen and he made a gamble on it and he made his firm like a ton of money. And then he kept trying to repeat that same thing. He kept trying to find the same thing. And if I'm getting the details wrong, I'm sorry, but the idea is there. And eventually, a friend told him, look, that same anomaly that you profited off last time is going to happen again, like in Hong Kong or something. But this time he had the foresight, you know, he had the experience to negotiate a bigger cut of the profits and all that. And I remember reading that story thinking, boy, is he going to tell me about how to invest? Because this is really cool. <You know? laughs> It was just a story, you know, it was really good.
Yeah, what that was, yeah, it was this, you know, stock market entrepreneur, who's working for a firm. And yeah, he saw this anomaly that he could profit on. He did. He made a bit of money. Not as much as he would have liked because he hadn't cut a very good deal with his employer. And then he spent years trying to find another way to make a lot of money and ignored the way that already worked once.
Yeah, that was right. That was
and then somebody just, you know, shook him up and said, hey, you know, why don't you just look for the same thing to happen again? It will happen again. And this time he was forearmed. He made it. First of all, he took a much bigger bet and he cut a much bigger, much better deal. Yeah, I remember that.
It's just a cool story. I mean, I seriously was reading that. I'm not even into that stuff. I'm thinking, wow, this is a, you know, how can I get this guy's course, you know?
Right.
He doesn't even have a course. It doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah. Let's go back to books again, because we didn't even get to talk about any specific book, except for the one you mentioned at the beginning of the interview. Books that really have moved you in terms of copywriting and giving you, you know, direction.
Well, as far as books, I mean, there's been a lot of different info products that I guess you wouldn't find in a bookstore. But as far as books, you and I have talked
Info products is fine.
Okay. I would say that it really comes down to three or like four different products here. One of them would be I had bought the compiled copywriting issues of Gary Halbert's newsletter from Scott Haynes. This was back when I was doing those Elance jobs. In fact, that's how I paid for it. That was a huge one, just reading and rereading. And I just have one of these, like, INTJ personalities where I can just read the same thing, you know, 10, 20 times, and it doesn't get boring. In fact, it gets more exciting because I pick out things. That was a huge one. Another one was Gary Bensavanga's course, which, I mean, that thing is just phenomenally good. I think I've gone through that at least 25 times, and I'm going to go through it again because it's just every single time there's something that just sticks out. That would be another one. A third one is this guy I know named Ken McCarthy. He did a copywriting course, which I thought was pretty good. And that had a huge impact on me, actually. I mean, a lot, you know, the beginning part I had already been familiar with, but as I was going through it, there's a lot of stuff in there about positioning and the inner game and that sort of stuff that you just don't hear anybody teaching ever. And that was just huge. And then finally, Eugene Schwartz's Breakthrough Advertising, which, I mean, you and I have talked about that book before. That thing is just a treasure trove. I mean, it's just, you can go in there any page and open it up and you're going to learn something.
You mentioned something about taking a single book and just, you know, going through it over and over again. And I find that very few people do that, and I think they don't do that because they don't understand the value. Now, obviously, if a book doesn't have anything in it, reading it 25 times isn't going to help make it any better. But when you do find something that's good, wow, don't be shy about, you know, reading it 5, 10, I mean, really, 5, 10, 20, 30 times. Speaking of Gary Bensavanga, I believe that one of the books that he read on a regular basis was another great sales classic, How I Raised Myself from a Failure to Success in Selling. And again, that's just, you know, another one of those books that you can go back to it again and again and find new things over and over again. And by the way, this is something, and I think we've talked about this, and I believe it's not in Gary's course, it's in the interview that he did for System Club. And he took a lot of the live selling insights from Becker's book and applied them to direct mail. And those were some of his biggest hits.
Yeah, In fact, I was just re-listening to your guys' interview, ironically, a few weeks ago, and he was talking, and the one that sticks out is how he did his, how he would structure his time. I guess Becker realized that when he's just kind of messing around the office and doing busy stuff, he wasn't making any money. But when he just really focused on being in front of customers, he would. And I think what Gary was saying was that's when he decided to put his, you know, 3 hours a day no matter what. And everything else has to go to the side. He has to get his 3 hours in. And that was, I have found that to be extremely good advice. I mean, I don't do for three. I usually do it for two. But even 1 hour a day can just set you apart from everyone else.
It's one of those simple secrets that you just cannot know how powerful it is until you do it. And, yeah, even an hour, you know, 2 to 3 hours is better, 4 hours. Well, actually, I was going to say 4 hours is better, but there, if you're really working at writing, there really is a physical and mental limit that you can sustain over a long period. And probably 3 hours is the upward limit of what's humanly possible. That's if you're really working at it. I mean, if you're sitting there, you know, staring off into space and multitasking, well, that's not really working. But if you're sitting there really working on your prose, 3 hours is equivalent of, you know, running about 10 miles.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody can run a marathon every day.
Yeah, that would get tiring. You know, another book that just, I'm looking at my shelf right now, and I can't believe I forgot to mention this one. It's not a copywriting book. It is a writing book by Stephen King called On Writing. And, you know, I'm going to give you some more credit here, Ken, because there's two people that I've learned the art and craft of tight, making my writing really tight from. One was you, because when I did the ad for your copywriting course, you kind of wouldn't let me just get away with it. I mean, you made me go back and just, no, this is still too wordy, you know. And now I have like this Ken voice in my head whenever I'm writing ads telling me, no, that's not tight enough. And I've gotten in this habit of reading my ads out loud 10 times before I let it leave anymore. And that's been hugely helpful. But Stephen King had something he learned from his one of his teachers, where your second draft is your first draft minus 10%, you know, word count-wise. And that is just really helpful advice.
Interesting. Okay. Just going through and just tightening everything up.
Yeah, I mean, that's like 90% of the battle, just getting that tight. And I'm in two different mastermind groups, and whenever I send them an ad to read, they're like, I don't know what else you could add or take away from this, you know what I mean? Because when you do that, when you have that mindset that it just has to be absolutely tight, like a news story. Like news stories used to be written. Nowadays, they seem to be getting sloppy, but, you know, they used to make them really tight, and you just pare it down. People who write a lot of pay-per-click ads are probably naturally good at this because they have to do that, but for anyone else, it just have that mindset.
I have to say one of the compliments that I love to hear is someone will take some of my writing when I used to write for clients a long time ago, and they go, you know, we sat around and we tried to change it, and every time we changed something, the whole thing completely fell apart, and we put it back together again. And that comes, and this is a really interesting thing. I haven't really thought about this in a long time. You know, we talk about taking a good book and reading it a lot. Well, if I'm writing something and I'm really serious about it, I will read that thing over and over. I'm like a guy sitting on a porch with a carving knife and a piece of wood, just whittling away all day long. You know, I've got all the patience. I don't even think of how many times I go over it. I don't even think of how long it takes. I just know that I've got that pocket knife, and I'm just going to keep whittling that stick till it's just the way I want it. And
that's awesome, yeah. Man. To have that, when people give you that kind of feedback like that, you know, nobody wants, when you get something that tight, they know if it's like removing a foundation of a building. I mean, it's, you can't move anything else without it all falling apart.
Yep. I want to share this story. I've never shared it, and I'm inspired to share. It's kind of related to this, and it's from China. And there's this mysterious Taoist, you know, who's wandering the countryside, and this lord rich guy hired him to build this beautiful pagoda, and he said, sure, you know, no problem. And he built the thing, and it was just stunning. And the lord said, well, you know, it was good, but, you know, you didn't really work that hard on it, and I don't really feel like paying you the whole price. And the guy said, hey, you know, no problem. I understand, you know. You don't mind if I just take one brick out, do you? and he pulled this one brick out, and the whole thing started shaking. And the guy was like, oh, my God, the thing's going to fall over. I'll pay you. And he put the brick back in. And I have a number of little businesses now. You know, over the years, you finally get crafty. And I have a number of little businesses where I'm a partner, usually the money partner, well, the money partner, and the other guy's the working partner. And everybody's making money. And then, you know, sometimes the working partner goes, well, I'm working so hard, they forget that I conceived the business, launched the business,
yeah,
provide all the money for the business. and yes, it is true that it's hard to wake up every day and work, but that's why I try to do it the other way. But I structure my businesses now where with just a flip of a switch, I can just, you know, change the whole thing. And it's not a bad way to think about business arrangements. It's just something that just popped into my head. But I love that story about the wandering Taoist that seemed naive until push came to shove, and then all of a sudden he wasn't so naive after all.
Yeah, I love those Chinese fables and that sort of thing, because they always have these interesting lessons like that, and really useful when you're selling stuff too, to be able to pull stories out and make a point like that.
Absolutely, and you know, those little fables, and every culture has them. And you know, actually, last time we were on the phone, we talked about,
yeah,
this. Those are like, you know, water worn rocks. You know, in other words, they've been around forever. They've been handled by thousands and thousands of people over the centuries, and those are really strong stories. And even if you can't find a direct use for them in your selling, it's just good to have them in your head, because they sort of teach you by example of how to pare things down to the maximum impact. Because again, we're dealing with attention and people's ability to focus. And you know, you may be the world's most compelling storyteller on earth, but hey, you know, you can't go on and on all day. You know, and the tighter things are, generally, the better. Well, great. So we've heard about some books that you like. Now, you've got a blog, of course, and where would people find you?
It's bensettle.com, and it's a blog. And basically, those are just emails I send. I send out a daily email during the week, and I just put them on the blog. So I'm not your typical blogger where I'm really focused on that side of things, but they can definitely read, you know, everything I've sent out. So I have 700-some pages, I think, on there now.
I love it. I love it. And, you know, it's so funny to me that, you know, this big blogging world / social media world, so many of them ignore email. And if they really wanted to succeed, what they would do is do exactly what you're doing. Conceive it as a daily or weekly or whatever it is. Daily is best if you can pull it off. Conceive it as a daily email, and then just put the emails on your blog.
and then tweet about them, and then Facebook about them. But everybody gets that part backwards. They're Twittering all day and Facebooking all day, and they wonder why they're not getting anywhere.
There was a representative, I'm not going to say which email company it was, but because, you know, I mean, the email companies are programmers. They're not really, I've noticed they're not really marketers. They're mostly programmers. And they're like, you should be emailing your list about your Facebook page and Twitter page. And I'm like, well, isn't that kind of like having someone at your cash register and then telling them to go to another store to hear about your product? It doesn't really make sense.
Exactly. So let's talk about daily emails. Now, that's quite a discipline. How did you come to decide that that was worth doing, and how do you get yourself to do it?
Well, I give all the credit to this to Matt Fury, because I've always been a big fan of his emails, and I finally splurged for his course, which is no longer for sale, at least the one I have. He has an AWAI version, which I don't think is as good as his original one, just my personal opinion. And I just went through it over and over and over, and he kept drilling in on this daily emails, and he made this analogy that just fits so perfectly with email, and he called it, it's like talk radio. You know, it's not really email, it's talk radio. You got your own audience there, and you've got the microphone, and now you can talk to them every day and give them a fun, informative email and make a pitch for something, just like a radio host does every day, and it's day in and day out, and people tune in to hear you. You're not an imposition on them. They want to hear from you. I mean, it's the whole concept to me is just so amazing, because I never had actually thought of it that way. And I can't give the guy enough credit. I mean, I would say of all the courses I bought, that was the one that's been the most profitable for me, because I've picked up email since then. And I've run with it, and in all kinds of thousands of emails probably written over the last couple of years, just experimenting and testing and just constantly looking at different ways of doing it. And just once you get into this mode of like telling a story every day, or just something fun, just the whole thing is, it's got to be fun. And the analogy that I like to use is a hot dog that it nourishes you like broccoli, and I'll explain that, because this kind of changed everything for me. You know the show 60 Minutes?
Huh?
Okay, the founder of that show, was it Don Hewitt? He had died a couple of years ago, and his friend Alan Alda, who played Hawkeye in the show MASH, they were interviewing him, and he said the reason 60 Minutes was so popular is because it wasn't just hard news. They made it fun, and he used that analogy. He goes, it's like a hot dog. It tastes good. It looks fun, but it actually nourishes you mentally like broccoli. So it's like it's a fun way to get content. I mean, most people just put content out, and it's just teaching, and it gets really boring, and you know, it doesn't stick out in the inbox, but if you say something fun and interesting and put a link in there to something where they can get more, your chances of making a sale go up dramatically.
Absolutely. I mean, people connect with other people at the end of the day, and it's a rare, rare, rare person that can operate strictly in the abstract. You know, in other words, I just want information. I don't want any personal interaction. I don't want any connection. I just want the facts. You know, it really... There may be people like that, and there are a lot of people that think they're like that, but you know, it really does boil down to making connections with people, and that talk radio analogy is excellent. We thanks to the internet. I mean, it always existed to a degree, but until the internet, when you had universal electronic distribution for free, it was just hard for the average small business, small operation to become a media source. You know, pre-internet, what would you do? You know, I'll tell you what you'd do. You'd write an article. You'd try to get it published. You'd publish a newsletter. But, gosh, you know, you really can only do that once a month at best. And then suddenly we can send out messages every day. And that puts us right up in the realm of, I won't mention, I'm trying to think of people who have daily TV shows that I can stomach. And unfortunately there aren't that many of them.
Yeah.
But they do very well. And the reason they do very well is that daily exposure. And you know what? This is really kind of interesting. They might have, you know, staff of hundreds behind them and hundreds of millions of dollars in infrastructure that gets their message out. You sitting at home with a keyboard and access to the internet can have the same impact on individuals. Now, you may not get the same numbers. You know, you're not going to have 20 million readers, probably. But over the, you know, the 200 or 2,000 or 20,000 or 200,000 readers that you eventually accumulate, you could have the same impact on them that these multi-billion dollar companies have. There's actually a really interesting thing that just happened in the news as we record this. And I'm so embarrassed that I can't pronounce this guy's name, but it's a Turkish name, and I just don't know the language and the name I've never seen before. But I know the guy. He has got a he still has a show called The Young Turks.
Yeah.
And it's a politics show, political commentary show. And he got himself up to he gets a million views a day. That's unbelievable.
Man.
And by virtue of that, he got a gig with MSNBC. And, you know, huge corporation, and they have the power to put him in front of millions of people. And he's to his credit, he's a very outspoken guy that stands by his principles. You know, he's thought through his principles, and those are what they are. And you're not going to, you know, you're not going to buy him. You know, you may persuade him, you may change his mind through an honest argument, but you're just not going to buy him. And by weird circumstances, he ended up doing so well with his style of reporting that he actually was beating not only CNN, but even Fox in certain key age group demographics. But he was apparently aggravating some of the management. This sums up what's wrong with our country to a T. The guy was making money for the business, but he wasn't politically correct, whatever that was. And so they said, look, we're going to take you off the air, we're going to give you a much easier job, and we're going to double your salary. And his attitude was no. So, but why am I telling this story? Well, he quit. And, you know, he gave up a big payday that he could have gotten, but because he has his own following that he owns, that he built up, he's a free man, you know. And so that's another reason for those of you that are maybe at the beginning of this process of accumulating a following. And, you know, people talk about lists, you know, how big is your list? And, you know, to me that's already a sign that somebody doesn't get it. Obviously numbers are important, but these are not, it's not a list. It's a group of people that are following you, because you're putting out something interesting and valuable. And how is that working? I mean, obviously, what happened when you started doing a daily mailing? What did it do to your readership? What did it do to your the connection you're making with people?
Oh, it was night and day. I mean, that was when I first started selling Copyright and Grab Bag. And before that, I had just mailed once a month or something, you know, nothing big, because I had falsely just assumed that nobody wants to hear from me that often, you know, all the same cliches. And it was just crazy. Yeah, I got a lot of unsubscribes, but I look at that as a good thing. I don't want people, like, I don't want to force people to listen to my show if they're not interested in it. If they're not serious about what I'm talking about, you know, my list probably isn't the best place for them to be. So it's good when they leave. But I also found that I was attracting more people than I was leaving, because, you know, you put it on your blog and all of a sudden people start telling other people about it. One thing I have not done, which I really need to start doing, is turning each daily email also into a YouTube video and a podcast, you know, on iTunes. When I start doing that, it'll probably get even bigger. And you can just...
I know Michael Campbell, a good friend of ours and, you know, veteran of internet marketing, recommends that, and it just makes really good sense. And you'll catch people, too, that are maybe, they're just not readers, but they'll love to watch or they'll love to listen. I've been really impressed with the power of audio material. You know, people will take that and they'll put it into their iPods and they'll, you know, go for a run, or they'll do their exercise with it on, or they'll burn it to a CD and listen to it in their car. And it really it has a big impact, way beyond what you'd imagine when you're doing a recording. You're just sort of talking and doing what you do. And then, you know, someone will meet you years later and go, my God, you know, I feel like I know you, which is a good impact to have.
My friend Michael Senoff, I think he interviewed you, didn't he, for his site?
He is an absolutely fascinating guy, yeah.
Yeah, he's all into this too, you know, this whole audio thing. That's his whole thing. I mean, he's just so passionate about it, but it's just amazing. He told me people look at him like he's a celebrity, you know, and they'll call him up and he'll answer the phone and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe you answered the phone and I know you're busy. And he goes, I want to tell him the truth, you know, I don't got shit going on right now. I'm just sitting around, you know, pardon my French, but I mean, you know, it gives you this perception, you know, that you're some kind of a big celebrity.
Well, you know, create media and put it in front of as many people as you can. and repeat. You know, there's really nothing magical about these guys on TV or these guys with their network radio shows. You know, they're just people that put their pants on one leg at a time. And this is advice we've been giving since literally at the birth of the whole commercial internet, even as far back as 94. You know, you've got the opportunity to become the media. I mean, up until the internet, pretty much, if you wanted to be in front of the public, you had to buy your way in with advertising. Or you know, in the direct mail world, you know, renting lists and doing it that way. And then, but of course, everything had to be physical, or it had to be broadcast over at great expense. You know, and I still think a lot of people just don't grasp how that has just been wiped away. One guy or one gal working at home, if they're willing to put in the time over a long period of time and be consistent, can have as much impact. Well, you know, I have a website that has as many viewers as a lot of cable TV news analysis shows. You know, and I'm running that like 15 minutes a day, 20 minutes a day.
Nice.
But I've been very consistent. Been very, very consistent.
You know what else doing this daily does? And I should mention this from just a copywriting point of view. When I started doing it daily, I got really fast at writing. Like, people cannot believe when I have a print newsletter and I'm about to launch another one. And people are like, how do you do this? It takes me all month. I write an issue literally in 2 days. I mean, I could have the newsletter I'm running right now, it's been running since March 2010. I wrote the entire 2011 issues within like 2 months last year. I mean, I haven't had to write a word of it this whole year. I wrote them all. It's all because of these emails. You know, I just fast now. And I think anybody who does that just gets naturally fast, and you get good at telling stuff really fast and not belaboring the point, because you're doing it every day. You know, I try to keep mine under 300 words. I mean, that's like my goal now. Under 200 would be even better, actually. But you just get fast at it.
That's a great discipline, by the way. Because, you know, there's a funny thing that I think was it Winston Churchill who said it? He goes, I'm sorry to have written such a long letter. Had I had more time, I would have written a much shorter one.
Yeah, I like that.
And you're like, what? What is, you know, when you first hear that, you're like, wait a minute, doesn't a long letter take more time than to write a short letter? Not really. And you're right. If anybody, by the way, and this might be a good place to wrap up, because believe it or not, we're at the end of our hour. If there's anybody out there that aspires to be a writer, a copywriter, or aspires to use media to build your business, build your following, raise your profile, then refer to the secret of this in the middle of our call, which is daily. Just get in the mindset that it's something that you need to do every day, just like brushing your teeth. And you'll find, I think, that getting it done first thing in the day is the best, because then it's, you know, you're often your freshest, but also it's done, it's out of the way, and now you can go and do all the 1,001, you know, non-productive things that we all find ourselves doing. I think that's one of the big, big secrets. And right, Ben, now you have how many hundreds of articles on your blog?
There's got to be over 700 now if you count pages and blog posts. I mean, it just, because I look, you know, every time I log in there, it says 680 some blog posts, but then I have pages up there. They're just hidden right now, but there'll be well over 700 even blog posts in a couple weeks, so, you know, quite a few.
So to think of doing that in one setting, oh my God, it's overwhelming, but when you're doing it one a day at a time, they just accumulate, and next thing you know, you've got this huge thing. We had a wonderful speaker, one of the best guys we've ever had. He is a rock and roll drummer, a real one, by the way, not a wannabe. This guy's a serious guy. He played with the Nine Inch Nails. He played with Johnny Rotten. His name was Martin Atkins. He's also a record producer and an educator in his own right. And he's a very good business educator. Have you ever had a chance to hear any of his stuff?
I haven't, but I want to.
Oh my goodness! I'll tell you, if everybody should Google Martin Atkins and his talk at, I think it was Loyola University in New Orleans. That's how I first met him. He's trying to teach college students how to become, you know, business and music industries success stories. And God, I could talk about that all day, but I'm gonna not talk about it all day. But what I will say is one of the stories he said, which was really, really funny, was that he went to China, and he saw the Great Wall of China, And he was just flabbergasted. He just couldn't believe the, the size and the scope and the length of it, and his mind just boggled. And then he realized in a flash, oh, but it was just, they just put one brick on top of another. it seems trite, but that's it. That's really it. And the sooner you get started laying those bricks one on top of another, the sooner you're going to end up with something. But that daily email, if you can pull it off, will transform your life, certainly as a writer and almost equally certainly as a business person. Well, Ben, thank you. I want to thank you for the time. I want to thank you for all the great educational work you've done. It's been very inspiring to me. I've learned a lot. The grab bag, we didn't get into the other books, but people can go to your website and find out about the other things that you're up to. That's a real underground classic in the copywriting world. That is for someone that wants to be a copywriter, that is just pure gold. So thank you for that and all the other things you've been up to and will be up to in the future. Thank you in advance.
Thank you for having me on here.
It's Ben Settle, SETTLE.com. And any parting words before we say goodbye?
Just, I just really appreciate you having me on here. It's been an honor. I mean, this is not your typical podcast show or something. This is a real stuff that you teach. And, I don't know. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, thanks again for sharing your story and the parts of it that I didn't even know. I never lived in an office, but I got pretty close. I definitely lived in a small place where the rent was even under $200, and I was there much longer than I wanted to be. But I did get out of there eventually. Just if we just end it with this, everybody's in a different place. Some people are, have something that's working. Some people have something that's, not working. Some people might even have their backs to the wall. And, if anybody's honest, they'll tell you, unless they were born with a silver spoon in their mouth, that, the beginning can be rough. And it's the price of admission. And, going back to that frog in the pitcher of cream, just keep paddling and keep trying different things. Not super expensive different things, by the way, but just keep trying, reading lots of books, talking to lots of people, doing a lot of thinking, taking a lot of notes, and lightning will strike. You will find that leg up that you need to get some traction. All right, so hey, Ben, thanks again.
Thank you.